Hello, my name is Louise Romanen. Thank you for joining me on my new podcast, Indigo Child. It's a place where I get to explore some of the topics that I love talking about in my live stand-up shows. What would Beyoncé do? Am I right, ladies? Politics for bitches and God is a woman. The language might be a bit colourful, so if you've got little ones nearby, be careful. I want to say a big thank you to all my supporters and my audiences that have helped make this podcast possible, and a huge thank you to all my patrons. And to Bernie, snoring in the background. You might be hearing more from her. Thank you, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining me again this week on Indigo Child. So this week, I wanted to do a conversations with, and we have been celebrating Pride Month. Beautiful, beautiful Pride Month, which is a celebration of the LGBTQ plus community. I've had a wonderful month. I'm very lucky that I live on a very Pride street in Birmingham, and there have been lots of nice little street gatherings, socially distanced, of course, lots of rainbows, lots of flags, lots of support for the Black Lives Matter movement as well. It's been really, really lovely just to see the community come out and come together. And so I thought it'd be really nice to speak to somebody who has got maybe more experience and insight into Pride than I obviously do. And I thought, who better to speak to than a very, very, very good friend of mine. And if you've ever been to my live shows, then you may have seen him because he supported me on several of my tour shows. It is the wonderful, the marvellous Erin Twitchin!
Yeah. Hello, my lovely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me on my podcast. It's nice that you're...
proud of you for doing your podcast finally, because we've talked about it for so long, and I'm very proud that you've got it all set up and that you're, I think you're talking about really important things and you're doing it very well. You've done it in your own way.
Thank you. Well, it's exciting to have you as a guest, because we've been friends for how many years now? Nearly 10 years, is it?
Is it? It's
9 years, I think, 2011, I think, maybe, or 2008.
Yeah, 9 or 10, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a long time. No, actually, we can't count. If it's 2008, then it would be...
It can't be 2008. I don't think I've been doing...
2012. Yeah. Anyway, so we met at Brighton Fringe Festival because I was practicing a show there and you were practicing your stand-up show there.
I was. Do you remember why we started talking?
Because my website was called iloveLouisa.com and yours is...
iloveErin.co.uk.
We were like, what? We should be...
You were like, oh my God, you didn't even have the guts to go global with yours. And I was like, I'm keeping it low-key.
UK only. Erin, you're a very openly, publicly gay man.
I mean, publicly? Yes. No.
I have to say it. You're very... Basically. Not publicly...
Can't hide this. Yeah, can't hide this. And why would I?
Why would you, right?
Why would you? I'm going to wear gay like it's a designer label.
Gay is a fabulous designer label. So, Erin, can you just to explain to me and Bernie, what was it like for you growing up as a young gay boy in Devon, the only gay in the village that I've heard you mention before?
I was
when you were younger. And did you feel when you were younger that you had feelings for boys or towards boys or towards men, or that was different to what you saw your friends being like, or whether you just felt whether you saw no difference? Like, tell me about how you felt.
Yeah, it was tricky. I think because I was a teenager in the 90s, because I'm years old, I'm in my 30s.
Hey, 35,
is that? 35, it's you. You're 36. I'm 33.
I'm 37. I'm much older, much older.
33. It was the 90s. So there wasn't a lot of gay representation in places. I think like Graham Norton had started by the time I was like 14, maybe. So, like, that was a big one that you saw. And you have Will and Grace, actually, to be fair. But that was pretty much it that I saw. So I didn't really... You didn't really know that much about gay. It didn't really exist here, like in Devon. There weren't like older gay people around. So I think the first I knew of it that I might be gay was when other people were calling me gay. So I remember as I was sort of coming to terms with it, I remember having this thought of, am I gay or am I just going along with it? Because everyone's said it. Now, kids at school, yeah, like people would, yeah, it was definitely from like all the way through high school, I think people would call me gay.
And it's interesting you say you'll come to terms with it, because what's there to come to terms with, if you know what I mean? Because it's natural, it's in your nature, it's normal. Like, so is it coming to terms with the fact that you're different to other people that you're around, or what was the coming to terms with to do with?
Well, I think definitely that language wasn't used then. We don't think we would have talked as gay as normal when I came out in 2002. Definitely wasn't talked about like that then. What I meant when I said that was me accepting it, me realizing it.
Yeah.
It is a bit of a process. Like, you never had to come to terms with being straight, because that's just what everyone assumed you were and that's what you assumed you were. Whereas, I don't know, I guess I've maybe tried to be straight, or everyone just hopes or thinks that you will be. I mean, look, mate, the rest of them. Just me wearing sleeves for a day, trying to be straight, let him wear a plaid shirt. It took me a while to realise and what that meant and how you felt. Like, it wasn't like at that point I was really fancying boys, because I came out when I was 16, so that was very young, and by that point I was at college, because we didn't have like sixth form or whatever at high school. You had to get on a bus to a college, and there was one college. And I didn't know anyone. It's not like I knew anyone that was gay, so there was any like examples of anything of like how you behave or how you'd be. So yeah, I did have to come to terms with it in a sense. I think most gay people would have had to come to. I mean, maybe that's not the best use of a phrase actually, but will have had to accept it in themselves and realise.
Mm. And did it make?
No, you go.
Did it make it easier for you once you accepted it, or was that a battle that you fought for a while?
I think it's a battle I still face, if I'm honest, babe. Like, really?
You're so confident, and you're so beautiful, and you're so honest about who you are and what you are, and it's beautiful.
So I think I'm quite accepting of me as a gay. I would say I have a lot of work to do with accepting other gays. I think I have a lot of internalized homophobia, definitely. So like a lot, like, especially, and I think it's a big thing within the community as well, around like anti-campness and anti-femme. You get a lot of people talking about being straight acting, like it's like that's the golden thing to be, like that's better, like if you're someone that can pass as straight, oh, that's like the golden thing to be. I think it's a really dangerous place for us to be as a community.
So what you're talking about there is like essentially a hierarchy of what's most desirable. And so if you're saying that at the top then is to be straight passing, is that what you called it? Straight acting, straight passing.
Yeah.
So that's somebody that you would just assume is heterosexual, right?
Or could pass, yeah.
Or could pass as heterosexual. And then I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, but the lower in the hierarchy is when you are more what people might call
feminine and stereotypical. So the people that sort of tap that stereotype and seem more feminine. And this isn't with everyone, this is just a general thing, but I think it goes a bit deeper than that. Like, I think the source of that is, you know, I certainly grew up with gay being used as a derogatory term. Like, if you were gay or a homo, that meant bad, that it was a synonym for bad. So you can't live your life equating gay and gay things and things that would out you to people around you as bad, and not internalize that you're going to carry it forward and treat others in that way. And a part of it is fear, I think, or fear, jealousy, you know, like, oh, that person is being so wild and so extra over there. Mm-hmm. And inside here, I'm like, oh, maybe I want to be like that, but I'm too scared to. So you sort of internalize a bit of that hate.
Yeah.
It's mad. Like, I don't know whether that would happen or something else.
It's interesting to hear you talk about how internalized homophobia. So homophobia, as we know, is when people, you might see homophobic behavior on the street or in clubs or, you know, in school or bullying or whatever. It's when people are horrible to gays just because they can see that they're gay and people are ignorant and stupid and all the rest of it. It was interesting. So on my street where I live, obviously it's been Pride Month and we've had lots of rainbow flags outside all the houses, like the street decorated like with loads of rainbow flags. It's really beautiful. And this old white guy walked past, and he must have been in his 70s or whatever, and he walked past, and for some reason he thought I was one of his, and he said, do you live here? I said, yeah, my house is here, right? And he goes, are there homosexuals living on this street? And I was like, yeah, it's fabulous, isn't it? And he kind of scoffed and walked off. And I was like,
yeah,
get the fuck off my street, mate. Like, you're not allowed to walk on my street again. Like, how dare you? Not only be derogatory and judgmental, but assume that I'm going to engage with you and agree with you and be like, yeah, isn't it horrible? Like it was such a backwards attitude. And I think a lot of it is ignorance and fear. Like it's so weird for me that people would be scared by that. I just find it bizarre. And you must have encountered so many examples and experiences of, you know, of homophobic.
That's the name of my new album,
homophobic behavior and experiences. You must have been on the receiving end of that, no?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. Do you know what? I actually think I've been pretty lucky, but then you know me very well. I love to rose into glasses on everything. I always forget bad stuff. I think you grow to I wouldn't say experience it more than people I know have experienced racism and things. I'd say, I hate to rank people's pain, but I'd say I've experienced it below that.
Hey, I don't think you should do that. Because your pain is your pain, valid pain. Their pain is their pain, valid pain. And if somebody makes you feel like less than because you are different, that is painful.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't think, like, those sort of bigger incidents, like that guy there openly coming out and saying things like that, I think I see less and less. You don't get that as much. Like, I don't think I've ever been turned down a job or anything. I've never experienced anything like that in the workplace where I felt like I couldn't stand up. Maybe when I was a teenager, there was times when I did, but I think I was always quite soapboxy and would confidently stand up for things. Now I think it's much more subtle things. I think it's sort of more microaggressions. Like you can't, it'd be things like, and this is no disrespect to him because he's been really good, but like, remember when I was on holiday last year and my dad's, we were in a holiday park, remember I rang you, and there'd been a gay couple stood in front of us that me and my mum had talked to, and me and my mum was telling a story to him, and he said there was a gay couple, and he just without anything, he just went, ugh, he said like, ugh, and it's little things like that, especially when it's from people that you love, that hurt more, and they maybe don't even realise that they're doing it, and it's those much smaller things in someone that normally would be much more careful around what they're saying that I think lead you to try and hide things more and not do so much and not be so openly out and proud. You know, like it's things that you get asked, you know, oh, but you'll be at the big parade type thing, you know, not really understanding that Pride was actually started about a riot fighting for our rights in the same way that Black Lives Matter is now. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't just a party.
Yeah. Well, Pride was back in, I Googled this, so Pride, the original date of Pride was, it comes from the Stonewall riots, which was 1969, 28th of June to the 3rd of July 1969 in Greenwich Village in New York in the United States. And that's essentially what we're celebrating now, isn't it? When we talk about Pride, we have Pride Month. That's what we're celebrating is that liberation and for equality and for freedom and for respect, like just basic human rights really is what we're talking about. I really want to go back onto that point of internalized homophobia, because we can't always, I mean, there'll be loads of instances, we can't always talk about other people's reasonings for why they do things or why they say things. Like, we don't know, you know, their reason. We can just assume that they're ignorant and uneducated and stupid.
I think not stupid, maybe. I think the ignorant is better. I think you're right with ignorance. And not that they're purposely ignorant. They're just, maybe they've mean it, they've not experienced it.
Mate, I think they're stupid. Like, do you know what? I've got a bit over this idea of giving people a wide berth. Yeah, because even things with like Brexit or with, you know, politics or things, you go, okay, I understand. Because, like, listen, I'm not even ignorant about so many things. I fucked up and I made mistakes. Yeah. I said stupid things before, right? And if I keep doing it and I keep doing it, there's got to be a point where you go, she's just stupid. She's just stupid. Because if I've had the opportunity to learn and I haven't taken it, that's just stupid, right? So if somebody is again and again and again and again and again homophobic, you're just stupid. Like, there's no reason for it in this day and age for you to behave like that or to be like that towards another human being.
I think people that, so you take that example of the 70-year-old you said earlier, like, how much of his life will have been where it was wrong to be gay, you know, and it was criminal by law. I mean, gay marriage was legalized till 2003 in this country. You know, that's not wrong that we've had that. And it was, you know, illegal for it even to be taught in schools into the 80s and through the 90s, you know, until it wasn't that Section 28 wasn't that only repealed in, like, it was the Labour Party, I think, but it wasn't until, like, turn of the century, I think. I haven't got the date in front of me.
We're now in 2020 and you're living in Birmingham city centre and you're walking through the street, you're walking through a very cosmopolitan student mixed background area, like, it's multicultural area, it's very mixed, it's very, there's lots of young students living here, lots of people from all over celebrating rainbow flags. You're stuck in the wrong era, mate. Like, just
But you would have had 50 years of it being the other way, and it's only the last 20. I mean, that's like a lot, but
compassion. You're showing more compassion than I have or than I did.
I'm very compassionate today.
So this idea of, like, self-hate or self-loathing, which I think we can all identify with, whatever your sexual preference is, whether that becomes about your own body image, whether that becomes about your sense of self-worth or sense of your value of yourself, of your life, of your being, whether that's your sexuality or your race or your religion or whatever it is that you can find, you know, we can all have ailments in these things. And for yourself, it was internalized homophobia. So when you talk about internalized homophobia, does that mean that when you see somebody that is straight acting, that you find that more sexually attractive than, say, somebody who is overtly very stereotypically camp and pink, for want of a better phrase? I don't know.
Yeah, I will say that I do that. Yeah, and I'm actively working at not being like that, because it's unfair and it's an issue I have. I think it's also smaller than that as well. It's, I will instantly, if there's a TV program that's focused around gay couples and gay relationships, I will instantly be like, well, I'm not going to watch that, because I feel like it makes me more of the stereotype. It's living up to expectation. Like, it took me the longest time to start watching RuPaul's Drag Race, because I just felt like, oh, such a stereotypical gay thing to do. I mean, I do have issues around lip syncs. I do not enjoy lip sync, but, you know. But I think, and it was about me, almost like I see myself worth in, by not fully being the stereotype, I'm better, which is just it's taken a long time to do that. But then I think it was only 10 years ago, if you'd offered me a drug that would have stopped me being gay, I would have taken it. And I said that to people, that I would have taken it. And that's only 10 years ago. Like, it's taken me a long time to get to a point where I wouldn't now. And that's, I think, where we have now, because, like, currently so the government made a promise 2 years ago that they would prioritise illegalising gay conversion therapy treatments, a lot of them being run by religious groups or community centres. And now they've announced, I think today or in the last few days, that they're going to hold a debate about it.
What?
Debating whether it should be illegal to stop trying to convert. And I think I feel very sympathetic towards that, because 10 years ago, maybe if I'd known about a treatment like that, I think I would have. I mean, I know an older lady, and I won't say, I'll tell you afterwards, I'll DM you, but they, you know, in the 60s and 70s had a mental breakdown. They had a family that they'd left, and they had like electric shock treatment therapy. And I think likely because it turns out they are lesbian and they're in a loving lesbian relationship now. But she would still take electric shock treatment today because, you know, it just runs so deep. It's like I'm saying about that 70-year-old man, you know, like when you've had 50 years of conditioning about what is right and what is wrong, and then suddenly that gets flipped. It takes a long time to undo that. And some people maybe just don't have the mental capacity to change that. And I think that's why it's a big risk. There will be people out there, especially in lockdown, it would have been difficult for people that maybe haven't come out openly to their parents or to their families because for one reason or another, or maybe, you know, they, like me, were only just accepting it at this point. Mm-hmm. And that's a dangerous place for those people to be. And then when there's those options of these conversion therapies there, it's really dangerous. I think it's really
incredibly sad. And it's also it's angering on several ways. It's angering because it's religion interfering with politics again, because they won't want to, they'll have the religious reasons and politics won't want to, on their religious freedom or people's right to practice religion, blah, blah, blah. Like we had in Birmingham when we had, there were schools and there was protests from a group of Muslim men that didn't like that some children were being taught about LGBTQ in the classroom. And it was really like lovely basic stuff. Like it was not adult relationships. It was not in detail. It was not out of a child's remit or knowledge or understanding. It was just saying that these two people are the same and they love each other or whatever it was. Like it was really simple. Yeah. And that argument was like,
Penguins, was it? Two male penguins adopt a baby. It was, I think, it's based on the story in Edinburgh Zoo.
Yeah. So it's just, it's really interesting. I find it really incredibly frustrating when religion interferes with nature and with what's natural and what's beautiful and what people should be celebrated for and not be made to feel different or alien.
It's so funny that you've just said that story, actually, because you just completely reminded me of that time, because it was only a year or so ago now, wasn't it? And I remember us sitting in your kitchen and talking about it, and I wanted to go and counter protest, remember? Thank God I didn't, because I don't think that would have been a safe option. But when you asked me earlier about, experiencing, you know, that higher level homophobia, I said, well, I can't really remember times that I have. That was only a year ago, you know, and things like that do happen. I remember it wasn't that long ago in London, actually. I was walking with a man I was seeing, and I was around London Bridge area, and a group of young lads sort of said something, or like, cough, you're gay, boy, poofters. And I stopped and I was like, what? Do you want to, what did you just say? In a very like polite way. It was probably a little bit more high pitched, actually, because I was quite a bit nervous. Okay, would you like to come in here and say that to my face? I do think it's best to try and question it. I remember when, like, because you know, like you, as a stand up, we go to gigs that are sometimes a bit crazy. And I don't know, have you ever done like army barracks gigs?
Yeah, when you go to a gig that's like a village in the middle of nowhere, and you go, they're going to fucking hate this. They're
going to
hate
this. Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, I remember once being one at an army barracks, and like I was quite excited, but a bit nervous. That's full on like lad culture coming at you, and blokey bloke. And I remember like just I don't even really think. And I'll tell you what I do at gigs like that. I become extra gay, and I feel a bit guilty about it afterwards because I feel like I send gays down the river on it. Like I do hit every stereotype, and I do hit on all the guys, and it is a higher level camp, and it's probably more sexual than my normal set would be, but it feels like the best way to get through that. And I remember like after a gig like that, I'd torn a few members of the audience apart, especially the bigger, like more like macho ones, you know, to the point where I've given them a nickname that I know 3 years later the rest of the squad is still calling them. That's when you think like there is a lad in a Trent army barracks called Timmy Trendy, because I went to a gig one time. And I remember afterwards, like one of the lads coming up to me and saying, "Well, we don't like gays, but you're all right." I remember thinking, it's a foot in the door though, isn't it? It's 1 foot in the door. Like, next time you're slagging off gays, you'll be like, whoa, what was that one?
It's like when you were like, it's like when I go, it's not the same. It's like going on stage, people go, oh, I don't like female comedians, but I like you.
Yeah.
You go, oh, thank you so much. Oh no, please, I'm so grateful.
Although, sometimes you get the other one, you get the other way. So there's this, I think I can say, so there's, I've had a lot where people will come up to me and be like, oh my God, you were so funny. Do you know Stephen Bailey? He's really funny too. Like, oh, all us comedians must be the same. Like, oh, Alan Carr is just great.
Yeah. Are you and Graham Norton like best friends? No, funny enough, we're not. Yeah.
But we were all at the same Cher concert.
Tell me what it was like for you to come out.
Have I ever told you this story before? I'm not sure.
I think you have.
A really honest, truthful version. Not. So I was 16. And I'm not sure at this point how long I'd known or been aware. I think it felt like it all happened very quickly. So I'm guessing the whole thing is a period of about 6 months that I became like, oh, I'm gay. Mm. I wonder what happens next type thing.
I'm getting some penis! I love that. Oh, I'm gay. I wonder what happens next.
I feel a bit Natasha Bedingfield writing in my diary. Story begins. So I was looking at the blank space before me. And so I'd been, so my dad outed me, actually. So he'd caught me on the computer acting very shiftily and quickly closing down some web pages. And I made up some bull lie and went to bed. And I sat in my bed listening, and I could hear the, do you remember the old, like, when you logged up to the wireless, to plug in internet? Yeah. And I was like, so I could hear that going on. I was like, he's going on the internet. And I was like, I don't think I cleared history. Is my dad smart enough to look at history? And he was. And then, like, he called me downstairs, and then I went down, and I sort of just had to explain, like, yeah, let's look at this, because yeah, I'm gay, and I sort of had to say it. And he was mostly mad because I'd been using a family computer, and my sister could have seen that shit. So that was the first thing he was mad at.
Learn a thing or two, eh? Am I right, bitches?
She was a lot younger, not the best. She would have been like 8. But he made me. So my dad used to work days and my mum used to work nights. We had a very short crossover period as a family. He made me wait up and tell my mum that night on the basis that he couldn't keep it a secret and he didn't want to have to tell her. So I had to wait till my mum came in. So it already felt very unusual. And this was before mobile phones. So my mum wouldn't have been texted or anything. So she would have been like, oh, Aaron's up. It's weird. And I remember we were sat, and you know, I can remember it so vividly, mate. We were watching ITV2 or ITV, it would have been The Bachelor or Rika Johnson, you know, dating show. It was this dating show with a bachelor, and he dated all these women. It was hosted by Ulrika Johnson, and then one of the women won, but he went off with Ulrika Johnson in the end anyway. But that was on the telly, and I was like, just sat watching it, not really taking any of it in, being like, I'm going to have to tell my mum. And so I just like said, oh yeah, I'm gay. And she was like, oh well. She said, do you know what, it's weird, I can picture it now. So she said exactly the right thing, which was, well, as long as you're happy, that's fine, whatever makes you happy. Like, but her face didn't necessarily say that. I'm guessing because of the shock, and it's like an odd situation. And I think they probably would have been aware, because I wasn't, you know, like, I was, my bedroom was covered in Spice Girls posters because my dad suspected I might be a bit camp. And he thought, oh, if he puts these posters on his wall, that will definitely stop him being a bender. Little did he know. I didn't want to be in Baby Spice. I wanted to be in her skin.
Oh, so
that didn't work. So I feel really good. Sorry, I felt really good that my parents were the first to find out. Mm-hmm. And then I think I told my best friend like the next day. That was an easy conversation. Like, I didn't feel like that was very hard. But it was like a complete ripping off the plaster. And for me, and I still debate with this, like, now I was 16 and I was a very, like, a naive 16-year-old that lived in the countryside, like, didn't know anything about it. And how I felt, like, because my parents were obviously trying to come to terms with it as well. Mm-hmm. And my dad always mm-hmm. used to say, like, well, you have to help us understand this. Like, you have to help us get through this. And I remember thinking, like, yeah, but who's getting me through this? Like, I don't know what any of this means. Like, you're asking me questions I don't know. Like, he'd be like, well, what sort of guys do you fancy? And I didn't even know. And also, he didn't want to know. He was just trying to figure this out as well, like, together. So it was... I think it was hard. I think that's what I found the hardest, is like trying to figure it out myself, but also trying to figure it out for other people, which I imagine.
What advice would you give? What advice would you give to people who have a child who comes and says, "I'm gay"? What's the best way for people around somebody to support them? If they come out.
I have been asked this recently, actually, from a friend who suspects that their son might be gay. I think her son's quite young. And we discussed it quite at length. And I think you just have to wait and be prepared to listen. I think you just have to wait and let people find things in their own time. Like, because for me, it felt too soon. And I was 16. Like, now I hear of people, like, kids coming out at, like, 12, 13, 14. And I don't really know how I feel about that. I know the world has moved on, and I wouldn't want to slow down anyone's progress if that's their journey, but that feels incredibly young to me. Like, I don't know anything.
Yeah, but you know when you play cliche, so you're a kid, and it's cool, and you know you want to kiss a boy rather than a girl, or, like, you know, I did. And, you know, I'm sure if you're gay, you want to kiss a girl or a boy when you're a girl or a boy. Like, so 12 actually is not that young. Like, you know, at that age.
How far are you? Is it sexual then? Like, kiss chase, is it really sexual? Or is it just, I always thought it was just about learning.
I think kids experiment and they're interested in bits and bobs and people's bits and pieces from a young age, even their own bits and pieces. And it's only as it gets older, like, that you realise, oh, shit, that's for sex, or that's a sexual bit, or that's a, you know, they can feel nice, or they can feel cheeky, or you can feel flirty. Like, you know, when you're a kid, you can be all like coy and shy and flirty and thingy, but it's never sexual. It's just how we learn.
I was a late bloomer. I don't think this happens when I was 16, 17. I don't know if I'm a prude or a late bloomer.
Everybody, and it depends on how you grew up and what kind of environment you grew up in, and whether or not it was open, or whether people talked about it, or whether, you know, conversations were had, or whether it was explained. Like, I remember being really young and finding a video. Oh my God, this is so humiliating. I remember finding this video, this sex video. And it was a man and a woman doing a 69er. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Oh my God, what is he doing to her? Oh my God, what is she doing? Oh, that's so gross. And I was so freaked out.
Is that the pee comes from? Do you know what I mean? Like, why are you...
Dude. And I must have been
area.
I was like 14 at the time. So I was already quite late. Like, I just didn't get it at all. And I remember... running, we had a lodger in the house at the time, a lodger who was like 19 at uni. And I knocked on the door and I was like, Mark, you've got to see what this man is doing to this woman. It's disgusting. And he was like, what? And I was like, he has her mouth on there and he has his mouth on there. And he was like, no, Louisa, I'm not watching it. No, turn that, whatever you're watching, turn it off, put it back on it and just stop. And I was like, it's amazing.
It's so funny, isn't it? Those sort of.
I realised actually how impressive it was, but that took.
The thing to remember as well is, like, for a gay person at that time, like, you wouldn't have found a video like that. Like, you wouldn't have found something like that, and like the internet was just becoming a thing as I was coming out, so I was able to find stuff, and that's how I got caught, if you like. you know, like go back 5 years before that and that wouldn't have happened. Like, I think a lot of the sort of like this internalized homophobia and a lot of those issues you see now in the gay community of people my age and older, I think are different to the ones of the generation coming up now because of access. Like, the internet gives people so much access. Like, say you're a young trans kid, you can probably get on the internet through your phone relatively safely without someone catching you. Explore that and find out about that, and that's a really powerful thing, as long as the right information is there and that you're able to be directed to, you know, charities like Mermaids that can see you and not just hit these conversion, you know, sites and you know, whatever sort of organization is putting that stuff out there. But I think what I remember is, especially like I'm that millennial age where computers were coming in. So there was a bit of access. I didn't have any access to anything that showed me about relationships. Like, I've said this to you lots of times. Like, I think the reason I'm not the strongest at holding relationships down is because I was never shown what a relationship is. Like, mm-hmm. You can't just turn around to me in 2003 and say, oh, you guys can get married. Why aren't you having a gay wedding? When I grew up, my life thinking, I will never be able to get married because it is illegal. But you can't undo that stuff just by going, hey, here's a rainbow wedding cake, we built you a banner. It doesn't erase all that those communities have gone through. Mm. And part of the issue is, so we talk about this idea of like gay culture is gay culture. It's very different to any of the other cultures, like any ethnical or religious culture, because that's handed down to you by your family. You know, if you're from a Caribbean culture, it will maybe be your grandma's recipes or your teaching about how you behave. We really have that. Maybe you're in like the drag community, a drag mother, but even then you come to that very late in life, you know, like from late teenage years.
Mm-hmm.
Community, this idea of culture that we gain is passed down to us from people older than us. So the people that are doing that now have their own internalized issues and things that they're quite likely passing down completely inadvertently. I don't know what point I'm building to there, but what I am doing is excusing any mistakes I make in relationships.
No, it's an interesting point, because what you're talking about, I guess, is trauma, or passing on trauma and passing on internalized homophobia and internalized restrictions or an internalized sense of shame that I only hope people will break, because society is changing and moving forward and people will realize that actually that doesn't serve me anymore. I need to break through from those chains, because I deserve happiness. I deserve love. I deserve to be loved. I deserve to love. And I will flourish in that. And I can have it. But it's hard to believe that when you've been taught for a long, 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 long time that that isn't meant for you, that that path isn't for you.
Yeah. And I do think it is our responsibility as gays within the community to be role models and to pass that down and to help, especially when we talk about things like race issues within the community and the way that we treat and fetishize, you know, Black or Asian individuals. It is something that we have to do better at and other people can't fix for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the same with, you know, internalized homophobia. I'm very aware I still have elements and I'm trying every day to be a bit better. Take one pill of RuPaul episode every day. I think we have to, you know, expose ourselves to those things and try and address it and question it.
What would you like to see to finish up, I guess? What would you like to see more of? What would make you feel like there's been progress, or like, you know, what would make you feel good?
More than one gay on a panel show at a time.
Mm.
I mean, things, you know, you see it in little things like that. I remember once, this is going back a few years ago, because there's Baby Blue in Liverpool, which isn't there anymore, is it? No. I remember once I towed up to a gig and it was myself, Jen Brister, Jonathan Mayer, and one other straight male act. And we were looking around like, oh, I didn't realise it was a gay booking. I didn't realise this was a gay. It wasn't. Someone had just, I would want to say they messed up the booking. They didn't. They just made a booking. Good on them. They booked three and they didn't care.
Amazing.
But the audience, I remember there was this one table of lads and Jonathan Mayer was hosting and he was fully decked out the way that he does. He was bedazzled of face and he was high camp. he goes on, introduces Jen Brister, who opens, and they're like, "Whoa, I'm gay and a lesbian now. Whoa, what is this?" And then I go on in the middle, just lose mine, this one guy, just because of hope with it. So I do think a lot of it is about representation, like how much more, how can we do better at representing in media and hearing these stories? And I actually think Pride has been far better represented because it's coincided with this Black Lives Matter movement. And that's very much, I mean, we mentioned it earlier, like Stonewall in 1969 was mostly by Black trans individuals who went and fought for their rights. Like, it's crazy, you know, what are we, 50 years later, those are still individuals that don't have their rights, but, you know, white gay men for the majority do. So I think we have to stand up for all of those things. I think that's where the change is, listening more, learning more.
Yeah,
it's very basic, isn't it?
It's just having, you know, respect and love and care and treating people the way we'd like to be treated, and just recognizing that we all deserve and are worthy of love.
I think you're right. It's about us trying to be better role models, isn't it? Like us trying to be those role models that maybe we feel like we didn't have.
Yeah. Yeah, and just carrying the light forward a bit, you know, just carrying the torch forward a bit and making it a bit brighter for, you know, the next lot. Making it easier for the next generation rather than harder. Yeah. Generation, it's going to be harder for the next generation already. They're not going to have a planet to live on. Politics will be fucked.
Right.
Like, so the least they could do is come out gay and be fucking happy and proud and not have any issues around it. That's the least we could offer them. I mean, they haven't got any trees, but they've
Something earlier to me about when you started saying, "Oh, what advice would you give me?" You said a parent. I thought you were going to ask me, like, what advice would you give to someone that, you know, was coming out and was going through that process?
That was an obvious question, and then I thought, "Oh, I'm going to be snazzy and ask for the parent."
Well, yeah, but I was reticent to answer it because for two things. One, I was trying to think, like, what would have made my life easier then. But two, I was also thinking, like, I'd not have the most difficult coming out. Remember, I've got my rose-tinted glasses on, so I'll try and take them off. Mm. But I was never thrown out of my home. Like, I was never homeless. I was never, there was always a place for me to go, and there was always at least one person that could support me. I had a friendship group that were really, really strong, despite the fact most of them were full God squad. They went to a very, very full-on church. I went to one of their baptisms, and it was singing to Jesus. And they did think I was going straight to hell. But, you know, they never kicked me out. But I think, so I'm worried about what to say, but I think I'd say make sure you have one ally. And if you have just one ally, like one supporter, and even if that's, you're not going to find that in your circle of friends and family, there are charities out there that can help
you.
And if you have that one person that's got your back, you will look back and it will be okay. Like, it was a tough time for me at the time, but I look back and I can find so many like wonderful moments. Like I remember when I told my one best friend, I gathered our group of friends in the park because I had a big announcement. I had a big announcement to make. They all knew what this announcement was. I stormed in. I am gay, and if anyone has a problem with it, that's fine. I don't need any of you anyway. And this is my big announcement. And if you want to speak to me, I will be at such a coffee shop in an hour's time. My best friend, Lucy. Opened that coffee shop an hour later? No, we went to see X-Men 2, cried for 2 hours because it's all about accepting yourself, and forgot to go back. I only found out my good friend, Ashley, a couple of weeks ago. In the coffee shop for an hour and a half. They were very casual blasé about it all. I mean, there will be moments like that, and although you'll go through really hard moments with it, there'll be so many people that will surprise you and will be really accepting, and it will feel easier just to be yourself. But make sure that you have that.
Always used to be myself, and being gay is great. You're beautiful and you're great. Like, mate, I'm your fucking ally. We got you. Aaron, thank you so much for talking to me. Where can people find out more about you, please?
Well, you can find me at www.iloveaaron.co.uk.
Not .com, we're not going global. Don't go ahead.
you've got to accept things. Embrace. I am very proud of my humbly titled website. It brought me to you. And I'm Erin Twitchin on all socials. So it's Twitchin like kitchen, just with a TW at the start.
Oh, it's so nice to talk to you. Guys, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Indigo Child. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you got something out of it. Please share it with all your friends. Leave a review if you haven't already. And just share the link wherever you get your podcast from. Thank you for listening to me waddle on, wiggle on, rabble on, and listening to the gorgeous Erin Twitchin. I will see you and hear from you, or you'll hear from me next week. I mean, this is a very long-winded outro. It's just how I like to.
I like you'll see or hear from me. Very mysterious.
From me, a little snazzy sausage. Next week. Thank you for tuning in. I love you all, and to my patrons, you're the fucking bomb. See you next time.
This podcast was sponsored by me, Bunny. Thank you so much for listening. Tell your friends about me, and I'll see you next time. Maybe you could bring me some, I don't know, some chicken or some cake or some bread. I love everything. I love you. Bye. Oh, here comes the musical bit.